Mishnah Yomis for Shabbos Kodesh, the 16th day of Sivan, Tov Shin Pei Dalad. Masechta Gittin, Perek Revi'i, Mishnah Ches. Hamoitzis Ishto Mishum Eilanis, person who divorces his wife because she's developed or she is a male-like, masculine-like. Rabbi Yudah Mola Yachzi. Rabbi Yudah says he's never allowed to remarry her again after he divorces her. Why? Because we're worried that she might get married to another man and have children. And then the person who divorced her will come and say, oh, if I would have known that my wife was able to have children, I would never have divorced her. And it comes out that he only gave the get with the impression that she was an islandess, that she was masculine-like and therefore she couldn't have children. And therefore the get would be nullified. The children born from the next husband would be born from a woman who was really married to the first husband and therefore mamzerim, chas v'shalom. To stop this happening, the Chacham said, listen, if you divorce your wife because she's an islandess, because she's got a manly, and therefore she can't have children, that's what you think, then don't ever take her back again. And then you should know that once you're divorcing her, that's it, it's all over. Now, in the previous Mishnah, when we talked about a person who divorces his wife because of other reasons, like, say, a neder, Rabbi Yehuda was not so worried about spoiling the get, because he held, when it comes to a neder that requires a chochem to be matter it or to investigate it, Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Elazar, that a person would not want his wife to suffer the humiliation of coming to court and going through all this hataras nedarim. And therefore, the person who's divorcing it cannot say, if I would have known that I could have made a hataras nedarim for her neder, I wouldn't have divorced her, because people don't want them. They wouldn't do it anyway. That's a neder that requires a chacham to be matrit. What about a neder that does not require a chacham, that a husband can break it? Well, in here, Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Meir, that most people do know that a husband has the power to break the vows of his wife. So he can't spoil and say, oh, if I would have known. What do you mean if I would have known? You know, people do know that they can break a get of the wife, and therefore there's no worry about a husband, about a person who divorces his wife now coming back and spoiling the get in the case of a neder. But in the case of islandess, yes, with an islandess, it's quite possible that a person will say, he divorces her and then she gets children for the next husband. He can say, well, I didn't realize that. I would never have divorced her. That there is a real fear. To stop that, we say, listen, if that's the reason you're divorcing her because of an illness, then hereby you must realize that you can never take her back. The Chacham disagree. They say, yes, he can take her back. Now, the Gemara explains that the Chacham are really here, Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion, and therefore the Chachamim here are of the opinion, that any tanai, any condition made that's not or does not conform to the way that B'nai God or B'nai Ruvain made a condition, is not a tanai, is not a condition. What did B'nai God and Ruvain make as a tanai? What type of condition did Moshe Rabbeinu make with them? He made what's called a tanai kofel, a double condition, which means that Moshe Rabbeinu told B'nai God and Ruvain, if you go across the Jordan and fight with your brothers, then you will get this land here on the other side of the Jordan. But if they won't go chalutzim, if you don't go and fight with them, then your portion will be in the land of Canaan. You're not going to have this land. And that's the condition. That was a double condition, if yes and if no. And here the Mishnah is telling us that we're talking about a case where the husband did not make a tanai kofel. He did not make a double condition at the time when he was divorcing his wife, i.e. to tell his wife, listen, I'm divorcing you because you're an islandess. I feel that you're not going to be able to have children. But he did not go on to say, but if you're not an islandess, then I will not be megarish you. He didn't do that other part. And because he didn't, therefore it's an absolutely perfect gerushin. It's a perfect, complete divorce. And therefore, even if it turns out that she's not an islandess and she turned out that she was had children, there's no worrying about spoiling the get because the condition was not a proper condition. And therefore the get is a proper get. Nisais la'acher, what happens if this woman who divorced because there was an illness gets married to another man, and in fact the other man has children with her? So it turns out that she was not an illness, she didn't have this manly feature about her anyway, after all. And she comes back to her husband and said, look, you see, I've got children from my new husband, now give me the ksuba that you didn't give me back before. V'hi tovas ksubasa, she asked for ksuba. Why she asked him the ksuba? Because at the time she was divorced because of being an ailanis, she doesn't get a ksuba. That's the halacha. If a person did not realize that his wife was incapable of having children and only found out later, then with the divorce there is no ksuba being paid. It's what we call a mistaken acquisition. And since we're saying here that he divorced her because she's an ailanis, it must be a case where he didn't realize that. And therefore, when he's divorcing her, she did not get a ksuba. So now, when she finds out that she's not an ailanis, she's coming now to ask for the ksuba. Says Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Omer La, if she does that, we would tell her, listen, it's better to keep quiet. Shtikus echiyofa melech midivorach. Better to keep more silent about this than talk about it. Why? Because if you start asking for the ksuba anymore and loudly, the husband's going to say, oh, if I would have known that I have to pay you a ksuba, I would never have divorced you. Now, you run the risk that he can say that, and then you could lose your whole claim to the ksuba because of it. So, therefore, we're a beautiful teller. We would tell the woman, just lay low. They don't say anything. Mishnah Tes. Hamoichas atzmo v'esbonav l'goy. A person who sells himself and his children under the slavery as a slave to a goy. Raising funds to be his avodim, his slaves. Ain podinosa. The community do not have to redeem. In fact, they shouldn't redeem. Why? In order that a person should not do this again. He might sell himself and the kids out into slavery to a gosha owner, and then after being redeemed, he'll raise a lot of money by doing that again, selling himself again. Now they're going to explain with the intention or thinking that they're going to redeem him, the community will redeem him again, so therefore we don't do it. The Gemara explains that we're talking here about a case where he's done this already several times. This is already the third time that he's sold his wife and himself and his children into slavery. The first time round, and also the second time round, we say mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to redeem him. Take him out because you don't want to assimilate the whole family there and under the goyim. However, this fellow who's already sold himself twice before and now done it a third time, no, we do not redeem. Aval poidines abonim la'acham misesavihan. But the children we will redeem. We don't want the children to become assimilated, but wait after their father dies first. If their father dies, then they will do it. And that is, again, to prevent assimilation among the children. Hamoicher es sodeya of, but not during the lifetime of the father. During the lifetime of the father, we worried that if we redeem the children, then the father might get wise and sell them again, thinking this is an easy way of raising cash. Hamoicher es sodeya legoy, bechazal kachem in Israel. A person who sells his field to a goy, and a Yisrael went and bought it from the goy. Halakech may be bikurim. The buyer should bring bikurim. Even though the fruits grew under the ownership of a goy, because remember, it was originally a yid, the field. Then it was sold to a goy. Now it was sold to a yid, from the goy to the yid. So we say the buyer should bring bikurim, even though the fruits grew and became ripe under the ownership of a goy, doesn't matter. The buyer has to bring bikurim from them. Mipnei tikuna olam, to provide a remedy against, as we'll soon see what it is against. The Gemara explained there were two takanas, there were two decrees. Because initially, a buyer would have to bring bikurim min haTorah. Why? Because a goy cannot acquire land in Israel to uproot the kedusha. The kedusha will remain even when the goy is owning it. And he can't uproot it to say that, oh, now it's under a goy, there's no chiv and maestro syndromes. But the Chacham saw that people were selling their fields to goyim, because they knew, it's not so bad, the land remains holy anyway, we're not going to get punished for that because we're not lowering the Kedusha. When the Chacham saw that, so they made a takana that one who buys from a goy should not bring Bikurim. And they especially did that, people will know, wow, That means if I sell it to a goy, that means the land loses its kedusha. Look, no one's bringing bikurim anymore if you buy it from the goy. And therefore that held back and stopped many fields being sold to the goyim. But then they saw a problem coming up, another problem. And that was that once the Yidden realized, that the community realized that selling land to a goy does lower the kedusha, because look, if we buy from the goy fruits that don't have mikurim, then people thought, well, what happens if people have to sell the land? For some reason, whatever, who's going to buy it back? No one will be interested in buying it back. Why should I buy it back? It's not got the kedusha. We don't have to bring bikurim from it. So the Chacham went back and made the takana, reverse the takana, and now said, when if you buy from a goy, you are chayiv to bring bikurim. And that is so that the land, if it's been sold to a goy, people will make an effort to buy it back, knowing that while it's under the goy, there is not kedusha there. And this way, if they know that the land of Eretz Yisrael will still retain its holiness, even under the goy, then there'll be an incentive for them to buy it back. This is how the Gemara learns pshat, that there were two takanas. And our Mishnah is talking about at the stage of the second takana, that they said if you buy from a goy, you should bring bikurim b'nei tikkun olam, to encourage people to buy it back from the goyim, so that you'll be able to do a mitzvah of taking bikurim. However, others learn, Rashi in the Batanura, they have a bit of a different girsa in our Mishnah. Not ha mevi bikurim, not halokech mevi bikurim b'nei tikkun olam, but rather lokeach without the letter hey. He should buy and bring bikurim because of tikkun olam. Let's see how the pshat is. They will learn, Rashi and Batanura learn pshat in our Mishnah, every single year, this person who sold his land to the goy will have to buy from the goy the first fruits of the field in order to take him up Yerushalayim because of the tikkun olam. What's the tikkun olam? In order that a person should not want to sell land of Eretz Yisrael to goyim. And if you did sell it, Yitrach lachzor liftoi, so a person will be anxious to buy back again. And that's how the Rashi and Batanura learn pshat Mishnah. Not halakach, but if you sell your field to the goy, lokeach mevi bikurim. We want you each year to buy from the goy the fruits or the first fruits of the field in order to take up your shlaim because of the tikkun olam.